The legend built up around these travelers is immense. So when I say magi, what comes to mind? Wise men. Anything else? Magic. Gold. Copeland? All right. Long journey. Anything else? Star. Myrrh. Camels. Yes. So there's a lot here. These wise friends, they are rich in story, in song, in art. And yet so much of what we assume is basic to the story has actually been added to the bare bones of Scripture, layer by layer, over the centuries. There are magi, Matthew tells us. This is the transliteration of the Greek, magoi, sometimes rendered as wise men, sometimes as kings. And magi could be understood as wise men, likely pagan priests or astrologers, maybe magicians, maybe those well-versed in interpreting dreams. We know that they are from far away. Some scholars guess that they are Persians. Others say they might be Kurds. And by current scholarship, it seems most likely that they came from Babylon, just south of Baghdad today. So we have magi by Matthew's account. And remember that this is the only gospel that mentions them. But we don't know that there are three of them, and we only know that there is a group that journeys together. And we don't know their names either. Their identities as Melchior and Gaspar and Balthazar aren't cemented for another 700 years than by the venerable Bede. But we know that they come. We have historical documents that include the trek of these wise travelers and how they went further on, telling the story to other rulers. An unusual visit of some sort took place. And yet, so much of the story is left out. For my part, I imagine there was more to the story than three lone adventurers making their way to Bethlehem by camel, following a wild star. I imagine a whole caravan of seekers, of the curious, a winding procession led by those who had been inspired, who saw something that they could not explain, but beckoned them explore. I imagine a group of people who trust that the Holy can show up in very unexpected, indeed unprecedented ways. It is with this trust, this faith from outside the bounds of Israel, that they set out from home, through sandstorms and frigid nights in the desert, with the unquenchable thirst of mirages and hot sun. On and on and on, weeks and months, following this hope of possibility. This intrepid crew, wise, pays attention to the cosmos. These magi make pilgrimage, all in order to pay homage to a baby. This gives me pause. To what do we pay homage? What leaves enough impact that we stop, redirect our route, give our energy and our wealth and honor? Homage, it feels like a bit of an archaic practice, maybe because it stands in sharp contrast with many of the messages that surround us. Paying homage is a practice that requires humbling oneself. Taking the more literal translations for Matthew's gospel, paying homage is the practice of lowering oneself to the ground, offering thanks, both physically and metaphorically, placing another above you. This act of choosing humility, of exercising gratitude, can seem like whiplash when practiced alongside much of what society names as valuable. I think, for example, of campaigns like Verizon's recent Thanksgetting, a promotion where the goal seemed to be for us to amass our own accolades in reward for being good consumers. And I think more broadly of advertising efforts based on convincing us that we deserve X, or we should treat ourselves to Y, or that we should have Z because we are worth it. We earned it. These messages can be powerful, but they actually have little to do with what we're worth or what is of ultimate concern. And powerful as they are, these do little to change our posture in the world, to guide us towards humble gratitude, to bring us into honest connection with one another. And at the same time, we're not corporations. Yet something stops us. What holds us back from offering homage ourselves? This past week up in Seattle, I was musing on these magi. I was sitting at my aunt's dining room table, and my cousin sat at the other end. At first, I assumed that Toby was just taking the opportunity to embrace nostalgia and read through a stack of old papers while he was home visiting his parents from Scotland. But then I saw that he was not just perusing, but busy making notes on this increasingly complex sheet of butcher paper. Both sides were covered with names and notes and color-coded categories. This was serious business. And so after a while, perplexed, I inquired. Toby explained matter-of-factly that he was creating a comprehensive list of people who had made an impact on his life. His initial goal had been to write a letter to each of them before he turned 30. But as he pored over the many places that he's learned and served and adventured and loved, the list grew and grew. He was beginning to realize that writing so many letters in less than a month was unrealistic, that perhaps it would take all year. But the timeline aside, Toby was clear about the simple, if sweeping, intention. He wanted to take the time to let people know that they had made a difference for him, even if they had long since fallen out of touch. He wanted to offer them thanks. And what a gift. As everything seems to be sped up and mechanized and mass-produced, there is a quiet sort of truth in a handwritten letter, a wisdom in noticing the blessing of another. And what a change in posture, setting aside the relentless pressure to get ahead, to earn more, to achieve a certain status, rejecting the notion that our success is ours alone, taking time to pay attention instead to all who shaped us, who helped us arrive at this day, sitting with gratitude and then offering it up, offering it back to them. When we greet these magi, these dreamers, whoever they are, there is the temptation to settle for the stuff of pageants and Christmas cards. It's simple and lovely. But beyond the camels under the stars and the luster of the gold and frankincense and myrrh, we find the simple act of generous humility, of homage. Leaving behind all that is familiar, these magi wander and seek. They kneel before this nascent God unveiled for us in a small human. By the time they arrive, he had probably become a loud and squirmy and messy toddler. And these wise ones, carrying these gifts of great value, gifts of respect and honor, they kneel. They put this little one above them. They offer gratitude for the grace they have already received through him, for the light they see. These wise ones remind us that we are not to go it alone or to vie for the top in cutthroat competition. They remind us instead to look up and to follow and to trust that it may be a long journey ahead. When we arrive, then, they remind us to kneel, even in the most improbable places. And so we come. We come close to the ground, and with our perspective changed, we see God in our midst. We offer our gift of thanks. We pay homage.